showing that we're selecting the meeting from. Nancy says it says we're taking the meeting from the 12th.
I know, that's what they're trying to figure out what the heck is happening.
So it's not taking the 15th? Okay, so she's telling me this meeting.
Yes.
So just let Nancy know.
Yes.
Still celebrating that package. It's a regular
meeting. We've been having meetings coming up this week. Let's see if I'm scheduling. But I need to know how we're proceeding with these meetings and how much we're making the
Pardon me?
Do we have form?
No, we don't have form for entering the action.
Oh, well, that's really good.
What?
We're asking questions.
Well, we're going to start.
Sure.
No, Luigi was here.
I passed him in the hallway.
We don't need a form.
We're just discussing.
I could sit here by myself. You guys could all leave. That'd be fine.
Cool.
There's that you?
Yeah. the October 15th Finance Personnel Committee budget hearing will come to order. Madam Clerk, will you take the roll, please?
Make sure your speakers are on, please, Supervisors.
Sorry.
Supervisors Hodge.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
Romo West.
Excuse.
Jurczyk.
Here.
Lipscomb.
Excuse.
Alexander.
Excuse.
Stamper.
Excuse.
Johnson.
Excuse.
And Mr. Chair.
Here.
We have a group of four, exactly a quorum.
We don't have a quorum, so yes, it can be.
Just so everybody's clear, we aren't taking any action today, so we don't necessarily need a quorum in the room to finish, to do anything. The other supervisors have let us know they're running a little late, but we wanted to keep going, and they can catch up if they need to. So we'll start, Madam Clerk.
First item of business is child support services for 2430.
Morning.
Supervisors, how are you?
Good morning.
I'm Jim Sullivan. I'm the director of child support services. With me today is Agnes Martinowski, our operations director.
Yes.
At child support. I'm pleased to be able to bring it up before you today and say that this is a budget which I feel stops at least the downward cycle of position losses in child support. Not long for some period of time. You may recall that the state of Wisconsin has significantly decreased its commitment to child support from an overall program of about $8.5 million to 4.25, out of 50%. In Milwaukee County child support, we've seen a downward cycle in terms of our full-time equivalent employee strength from over 200 this year, 2005, down to into 130. This particular budget stops that cycle. This was a good effort of our department trying to maximize all the efficiencies that we're able to do. We were able to utilize grant funding. We were able to utilize some medical support financing for us to be able to maintain a resolution that we have been able to. The county executive and DASC staff has also stepped up and did that support.
It is important, and sorry, I just noticed that my microphone was off. I should know better. child support funding and having the personnel is especially important in this department, not only because there's a huge need out there. We have 126,000 cases where we're helping families in Milwaukee County and making sure that people are stepping up and supporting their own children so that a child doesn't necessarily fall through onto the public support roles, but has the support of both parents and the community. But for us to be able to do this, we are performance funded. And so that means that when we don't have the personnel there, then it's very difficult for us to meet the numbers that we're supposed to in paternity and order establishment and collection of current support, collection of on arrears, which is how the federal government funds us. So when we see that cut in the state of Wisconsin from $8.5 million down to $4.25 million, then what that ends up meaning is that $4 million cut is about a $12 million cut overall to child support services. So that's a very difficult environment in which we are operating. So I'm very pleased to be able to come to you and say that this is, I mean, essentially it's a cost to continue budget for us, but we're still able to do well. I think we have been doing well in some very difficult situations. In fact, over this past year, we had historically good numbers in child support. In fact, for the first time ever, I'm pleased to report the child support services in Milwaukee County exceeded 80% in its order establishment number. That's never been done before. So what that means is we've got good people on the ground here. They're doing their job well with the resources that they have available. This budget at least stops the downward cycle. In fact, just this past weekend, we were out at the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative Summit that was held out at the Destiny Campus out on Good Hope Road, and we had a dozen of our child support personnel, including paralegals, out there in the community, served more than, we don't have the hard number, but about 400 participants in the community. So these are dads out there looking for jobs, looking to be able to support their families, and Milwaukee County Child Support Services personnel were out there on a Friday and on a Saturday to get out there and serve these folks. So I'm pleased that we're able to do that. I want to continue to be able to do that because that helps to bring in additional federal funds, that helps to allow us to provide more services without necessarily increasing the burden to the taxpayer. So we are ultimately looking at a cost to continue budget. We're not looking at the loss of additional personnel for the first time in years that we've been able to come to you and tell you that. And we are looking at tax levy for the Department of Child Support Services of $1.316 million, total expenditures of just over $20 million, and again, hopefully be able to continue the level of performance that we've been doing without significant further loss.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Sullivan? Supervisor Jerzyk and Supervisor Hobbs.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You indicate no loss of personnel, and yet under your federally funded service delivery by other county departments, page 155, you highlight that because of the chargeback on the IVD service delivery, I think that's informational technology.
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to the...
You indicate, I'll just finish it, it is anticipated the loss of one child support attorney reduces the ability of CSS to fully staff the calendars currently assigned for IVD services in the Office of the Family Court Commissioner. And that doesn't square with the comment you just made.
You're absolutely right, Supervisor. And that's just a piece of the narrative that was missed. In our original draft of the budget, we anticipated that we would end up losing that child support attorney position, which would have an impact on other departments. And I'm pleased to say that when DAS and the county executive staff went through and was able to commit an additional amount of levy, we were able to stretch a little bit more. We saved that. So in the front cover of the narrative, those numbers are correct. We need to take that paragraph out, and you're very right to catch that.
Excellent.
We're not losing the attorney.
And they're going to continue to staff the family court commissioners with regard to child support?
Yes, Supervisor.
I assume we'll get a technical amendment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Supervisor Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Dr. Sullivan.
Good morning.
Looking into the page 156, first let me ask, sir, you say your staff level will remain level?
Yes.
Okay. You appear to have gained 2.9 position equivalents on the top line of the table on page 156. Are you gaining staff with that?
No, Supervisor, the difference where it shows the apparent increase of 2.9 FTE reflects some vacation turnover that we had in the last budget cycle, which has been taken out here. So that should not actually, this is not actually increasing the total amount of staffing.
So is it more proper accounting of who is there then? Because our empty positions are no longer empty? Or what are you saying there?
Agnes?
We do have some empty positions, but they will be filled.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything further? If not, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next budget will be 1913, the Civil Air Patrol.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Tom Mesher, and I'm from the Milwaukee 10th Senior Support Squadron, and I'm here to ask your approval of the 2013 Civil Air Patrol budget at Timmerman Field.
Thank you. Any questions or concerns on the Civil Air Patrol budget? If not, it looks like smooth sailing. So. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Smooth flying.
Next budget is 5040, DOT Airport.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is this thing on?
It's light on.
Red light on?
I can't tell. It is?
Okay.
Okay. My name is Frank Buzalaki. I'm the Director of Department of Transportation. My budget director, Debbie Bashian, is here. According to the docket here, we'll go to the airport first. But before we get to that, I'd just like to make a quick statement. Since I've been with the department, we faced a number of challenges. The challenges facing transportation are not unsimilar to where they are in the rest of the country. The funding keeps getting reduced, as we know, state funding, but I'm also concerned about federal funding. We're facing a lot of challenges with the two-year bill that was passed by Congress, and as you know, transit has a looming problem coming in 2014. So there's a number of issues that the department is looking at. Again, funding will be a key issue for us. We are watching this on all levels. I'm watching it on the national level as well as the state level. Yeah, so I think as we go through our budget, I think that you'll find that we've covered most of the items that you've been looking at. So with further ado, I'd like to call Barry Bateman, the director of the airport, up here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. My name is Barry Bateman. I'm the Director for Mitchell and Timmerman Airports. Historically, the budget has a zero tax levy because it's a user-funded enterprise fund of Milwaukee County. The most significant aspect of the airport is that we have experienced in 2010 and 11 intense competition with Southwest, AirTran, and Frontier, with good airfares, intense fare wars, and good air service. And Frontier has now de-hubbed at Milwaukee and we are going to return to a more normal growth rate, if you can call it that, because 2 years, those that 2010-11 were most unusual. And we will continue to see a decrease in passengers through June of 13. That's when the end of the Frontier Hub came to be. And then we'll start to see a modest growth rate starting in the second half of 13. The budget that we prepared in consultation with the airlines represents those actual facts of life as far as the metrics of the airport. And adjustments have been made to the budget with the airlines to cause the airport to break even. Notably, two of our major sources of revenue, which is parking and rental cars, have been reduced to reflect that new reality. Also notably, we are adding a few positions to the airport in the IT area and in the maintenance department area. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about it.
Any questions of Mr. Bateman, Supervisor Schmidt?
Thank you. What I would just like you to expand on, since I'm not very knowledgeable, I don't know how many people are, the new Milwaukee Regional Business Park, a lot of vacant buildings, a lot of potential. What's the projections on that? How much additional revenue can we kind of look at? What's realistic in this area? Would you be the person to answer those questions?
Well, I can start for you, Supervisor, Mr. Chairman. The old 440th, now called the Milwaukee Regional Business Park, continues to be at a loss. And so the airport continues to subsidize that cost center until it does generate enough revenue. There are currently about five tenants on the airport in that business park. And, you know, our goal is to increase tenancy to make that a profitable enterprise so that it starts to produce a profit. You're competing against, of course, other industrial parks in the area and other green site parks in the area. And so it's not that we're a standalone operation. You're competing against other very competitive business parks who may or may not wish to be adjacent to the airport. Obviously, the attributes that we try to explain to people is your next to air service, you have runway access, and those are unique features that you're not going to find at another business park. But the other problems we have are that it has a very limited frontage on College and Powell Avenue, and the buildings are aged, and some of them are very specialized. And so the questions that we have of, do we find tenants for those buildings that are good matches, or do we tear down a few of those buildings to make green space available? But we do have a champion that works on that for us, Ted Versivia, who spends much of his time selling that park, and we're going to ramp it up in 2013.
Well, I think we have to, obviously, mm-hmm. Yes. Or else this is something that we got. I thought there would be some vision here. I know the competition you talked about, but that could be, especially with loss of revenue and parking, because of decreased flights, although, we're hoping the other airline picks up a little bit here, as we know. Would you also talk to potential loss of the concourse and the effects of that on the airport, too, please?
That's going to be a topic that will be taken up at Wednesday's Transportation Committee meeting. What's contemplated is that because of Delta's possible move to Concourse D, that leaves only United on Concourse E. And so it doesn't make sense to only have those few flights out there when, in fact, Concourse C and D can be much more robust, and that's where all the concessions are. And so it'd be a much better experience, I think, for the passengers. I think, interestingly, if we took the 10 gates on Concourse E and scattered those 10 empty gates throughout the airport, no one would have known a difference. But the fact that we're taking those 10 gates and closing a concourse in order to have two robust concourses gets much more media attention than it would otherwise. But I think this is in the best interest of the passengers, and it's in the best interest of the airport, too, because we'll have two larger checkpoints, two concourses with robust concession opportunities that don't exist on Concourse E. And certainly, you know, we'll continue to sell the airport to the industry, but really, there aren't too many more airlines out there that we don't already have. So, it's, you know, when people say bring in more airlines, I say who? You know, because it's just not the cards, really.
My last question would be, I want to go back to the regional business park. I'm sure we'll be following that when you'll be giving us reports on that. That's something I think that we're always looking for more revenue, aren't we?
Especially we certainly are.
Other potential losses. So I presume that'll be a priority. I remember the one issue we had a number of months ago. There were people calling a lot of us. I had a constituent or two that had hangars out there. And you know, what's the situation there? Are we trying to, you know, replace hangars with other business potential? Have we lost hangars there, or what's that situation going on now?
That was related to the possible northward migration of the Wisconsin Air National Guard.
Okay.
That's the, and which I haven't heard anything about since then. Okay, so I don't know
either
where that is.
I just wondering what's happening.
Right. No, I haven't heard a thing about that proposal since it was floated 6 months ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Supervisor Jerzyk?
Well, perhaps I can provide an update. I did meet with Gwen Moore during the summer to discuss the 128. They are on a potential base closure list, which is a real concern, $77 million economic impact to our communities. The resolution that the county board did was to try to strengthen their hand, if you will, on that base closure list. One small update, I'd like to ask Director Bateman about that. There's a service road that recently gotten money from the state to the airport. And I know that service road has been planned for a while, but it also will include the road that goes on the westernmost part of the property from the base to Layton Avenue, as I understand it. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
There are a series of service roads that have been planned, and many of them have been built, but we still have a few areas that are to be built. And one is from the College Avenue up towards the base. And another one is, I think you know, is from Layton Avenue over towards the business park.
Layton Avenue to the business
park. Right, you go around the airport.
So it's just the College Avenue, from College Avenue to the 128 base?
Yes.
And that it ends there?
It ends there because it has to terminate there at the base.
And then you're going to potentially build a service road from Layton Avenue to the
base? Yes.
To the base?
Yes.
And is that part of the money that you're getting from the governor?
Yes, it is.
My understanding is you're only getting enough money for a single lane road.
Oh, it's two lanes.
It is two lanes.
Two lanes.
All right, because that, all of that is part of that potential plan.
Right.
No,
it's two lanes.
I found that very helpful. It's good news.
Right. Yeah, indeed. It is two lanes.
We'll take good news and we can get it. But it is two lanes.
Yes.
Great. With regard to closure of the concourse, I think your planning is very wise on that, and I don't pretend to understand. I mean, the airport business is an extremely complicated business with the airlines, with the FAA regulations, with this wonderful county government giving you additional things to think about. So, you know, I applaud the way you can balance all of those things and still keep a very fine airport running. The one thing I continue to be very concerned about is the way the restructuring of the airlines is affecting the passenger experience. And I had I did have an experience in September of flying Southwest. And you make reservations, you know, for a passenger seat, and you think you've got a place on the airplane, and when you get there at Southwest gate, you find out that the number you have is really to get in line. And you then go on to the plane, and it's a free-for-all. you know, get the seat you can get. No guarantee. My daughter and I traveled together, both ways Southwest, and we could not sit together. And I'm very concerned about that. I think this is kind of a new thing, at least for me. You can tell me if it's been there for a while, but I'm concerned that this is going to really start to develop into a third world free-for-all where people no longer understand that they have a guaranteed place, and they start competing for places in line to get into the airplane, et cetera. And it looks to me like it's going to eventually cause safety concerns. I don't know if we have any control over that. And that's my question. I mean, is there some way that at least in Milwaukee we can somewhat control the passenger experience, make sure people are treated properly?
No. That's an airline prerogative, and we have no control of that. And interestingly, when AirTran in Southwest, when Southwest bought AirTran, the business community were saddened because they loved the first class experience on AirTran, and they also liked the assigned seat on AirTran. Southwest's business model does not do that. Southwest is the only profitable airline out there. Okay, so choose your poison, but that's not their model. You have to go through a different process, and it's going to take a while, I think, because Southwest is new to town. It's going to take a while for Milwaukeeans to understand their model, and that you have to get online 24 hours in advance to get that priority seat A, B, or C, you know, program going. But, they're not, Southwest is not on the Orbitzes and Travelocities. They're only on their own website, and so they have a different model. But it's one that works for them because they've consistently had a profit, whereas others have not.
Well, it just depends on how much the passenger wants to continue to be treated like a
candidate. That's right. Other airlines are saying, come to us. You know, so it's a competitive world out there.
Well, for the wise traveler out there, when you fly Southwest, tell them you want to be in the front of the plane because they take that part of the line first. So at least you have some chance in competing for those seats.
Right. Well, the other phenomenon that's occurred, Supervisor, is that almost every airline now has added these ancillary fees, and it's become a major part of their revenue stream. You know, this seat assignment, do you want to check a bag, do you want priority boarding, do you want a pilot, that's $10 more, and it's, you know, that's the way they've changed, and the thing is that I just flew to New York last week for 2 18 round trip. You know, that's nuts. In inflated dollars, from 1978 to 2012, we should be paying about $1,800 to fly from here to Los Angeles. But in fact, in uninflated dollars, we're paying about $400. So we pat ourselves on the back about the great low fare we got, but then we complain about the customer service. So that's the industry today.
Welcome to the days of government controls.
Yeah, well, pre-reg, right? If you book ahead, you can still fly for a bargain, but it is a very difficult experience.
One other question I have on the MKU Regional Business Park, and I just want to say that we did the South Shore Option Economic Development Forum. Ted Forsythia gave just an excellent presentation on that, and I look forward to the board perhaps getting that. One question. I am a member of the Airtropolis Board, which includes the mayors of the communities that really kind of surround and use the economic development of the airport within their own cities. And with regard to the Airtropolis Board, the dues that really keep the studies of the logistics of economic development, et cetera, have been paid for by grants from the cities, et cetera, and they've asked the county to at least consider being a partner in this effort. And unfortunately, the county exec chose not to put anything at all in the budget for the Aerotropolis. And this is really a fairly smaller amount. Some of the cities are paying $5,000 grants, that kind of thing. Would it be possible under the MKU Regional Business Park model where you have the cost charged against within the rentals of existing business to at least include the Aerotropolis grant for that organization within that MKU Regional Business Park? Is it at least possible to look there?
Chairman, supervisors, it is not. The FAA does not permit airport revenues to be used for general airport general economic development purposes.
So there's no loophole, you see?
No.
Okay, I'll keep looking. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Supervisor Haas. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Mr. Bateman. Back on the concourse for a moment. We all have fond memories of Concourse D. But it appears its days are numbered. Probably, you would say for the foreseeable future, it's going to be used for other purposes?
It won't be used for other purposes.
No, not at all.
No.
Okay.
It's not really. You know, it's pretty unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will that, there be any cost to the county just to have it sitting there beyond, say, opportunity costs that are not being gained, or opportunity costs that we'll have to pay? What does it cost us to keep it there? Does it cost us significantly?
To leave it in a dormant state?
Yes, sir.
Well, we estimate that there's a potential cost savings of $216,000 per year to close it. I don't have the accurate numbers in front of me. I'm still working on those, but the incremental increase in concession revenue eclipses that because of the increased concession opportunities that are on D versus the limited concession opportunities on E. There's going to be a bump, and it's going to be more than this number, so it actually makes some sense from that standpoint.
Okay. So you're saying that the opportunities gained by the consolidation and with the reduction of the cost of maintaining that extra concourse,
right,
is a better, it brings a better picture for the airport and for the county?
It does. It does.
Yes. Very good.
Right.
Now, looking back a little bit, we have those large parking structures. They're adjacent to the airport. Are those, say, if you're going to expand, if you're going to add to the parking garage, or say you're going to build a whole new one, now, how is that paid for? Does that come from the airline fees?
Well, it's the airport is a single cash register, if you will. And so if we did build additional parking, which is not in this budget, there is an opportunity to build additional parking structure and some limited surface lots, and that comes from the airport enterprise fund. Now, usually you do a cost-benefit analysis to see where the break-even is on that type of thing, because there certainly is going to be some lead time before that starts to generate adequate revenue to pay the annual depreciation on bond that would be used, but amortization, rather. We're not anywhere close to that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Especially given the sudden drop.
Well, that's true, although remember that much, not much, but a large chunk of the Frontier passengers were just changing planes at Milwaukee, going from Des Moines to Milwaukee to New York. And so they don't park cars. And so although passenger traffic is down about 20%, actual origin and destination traffic is down about 14%.
What does that translate to in, say, the number of people coming to the airport, or arriving at the airport?
It's a 14% reduction.
Yeah,
yeah.
From like from a 20,000 from
5,000. Well, from four from. From 4.7 million passengers per year, and that's not that's total though. That's including transfer. Okay, so let's say 4 million down to 3.7 million or something. Mm-hmm. I can get you more accurate numbers as to what the origin destination traffic is. But that's an important distinction because.
Yeah.
The O and D, origin destination traffic, are the people who park cars, people who rent cars, the people who travel through the airport and purchase concessions, transfer passengers in and out. They might buy a hot dog as they go through.
Right. If we're lucky.
Right.
Okay. There's a couple more questions for you, Mr. Bateman. On the business park, can you tell us the current number of tenants you have there?
Five.
Okay. Right. Yeah, thank you for that earlier. Thank you for repeating that. And I know Mr. Torsavia is indeed working very hard on gaining more tenants, and I'm very happy with his work there. Where does the largest cost increase to the airport come from with regard to the business park?
That number is reflective of more accurate history. Now that we've had it for a couple of years, we're getting better accuracy and fewer guesses as to what that's costing us to provide the facility. And what that number is reflective of is utilities and upkeep of the buildings.
And if there's a very old, very specialized building, would you be looking at having a tenant come in? And could the tenant then ask for that building to be raised or significantly remodeled?
Oh, I think it's all something that you negotiate. One thing that we're going to look at, even without the tenants, is from an independent standpoint, are there some areas that are just not potentially rentable? And should those buildings be torn down to make a green site more attractive to investors than one that has a hodgepodge of buildings on it?
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Payton.
Thank you. Supervisor Lipscomb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly on the airport business park, because I think we've talked about as much as we can for the amount of information we've got here. When are we going to be presented with effectively a business plan on this to see, you know, when you project it to break even, much less be profitable to the enterprise, to the overall enterprise?
We do have some funding in the 2013 budget to do some vision making on that, so we can do that in 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd appreciate seeing this, and I've mentioned this before, seeing this portion of the enterprise broken out separately and seeing sort of how it performs, because I can't believe we're sort of this far into it and I haven't seen that, and that we seem to lack some
your
fundamental
point well
understanding
taken.
Where
right.
we're going.
Right, right, right. And again, I want to emphasize that as much as the to some businesses being next to the airport is fantastic, to other businesses we're competing against beautiful business parks out there on the south side, you know, and so it's not that we're the only game in town.
Absolutely understand that. Moving on, I wanted to understand how it is that we seemingly increase the budget despite the fact that revenues are markedly down in parking and rental car and other areas, and yet that doesn't seem to be of significant concern to us, that the overall budget is still going up, that's just a cost shift that we've got going to the reimbursements from the airlines.
That's
put us on an unsustainable path, uncompetitive path?
No, sir, I don't think so. Supervisor, Chairman, but you got it exactly right. Okay, it is a cost shift from parking to the airlines, who promised to make us a difference to make the airport break even. At the same time, and the reason that you don't see a marked difference in the airport budget overall is because it's mostly a fixed cost operation. There's not that much variable cost. Whether you have 200 departures a day or 150 departures a day, you've got to maintain the airport the same. Okay. It's possible to see a tiny reduction in cost because of the potential closure of Concourse E, but it's not significant to the overall. But we aren't looking at it just as a cost shift. We also have adjusted the budget significantly to reduce expenses, reflecting the new reality. But we are not out of the range of reasonableness when it comes to airline rates and charges. We're still very competitive in that range. So we're not out of the ballpark in terms of what we're charging our customers. Okay.
And then I don't particularly see the discussion in here about the closure of E. Is that just the timing?
It was a timing thing. That's right. That's coming up in future meetings, but it was a timing. We start working on this in April.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions, Mr. Craven? Supervisor Jersey?
Just one more quick question. with the closing of that concourse, how does that affect the master plan going forward?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the curve of the master plan has been pushed down. I mean, we've gone from 220,000 takeoffs and landings per year to 170,000 takeoffs and landings per year. In terms of the airfield, in terms of the terminal complex, what you're seeing nationwide is this consolidation of airlines. And, you know, 10 years ago we had 10 airlines. Now the nation has 5. And whenever they merge or consolidate, you also see a reduction of facilities. That's part of their business plan, you know. So I think that the likelihood of expanding the terminal anytime soon is very, very slim, you know, because, A, now you have a 10-gate concourse that's up for rent, you know, and, B, the number of airlines and the growth curves that were projected before are not going to manifest.
The estimate I had heard was, you know, this master plan implementation was 20 years. I mean, has that been pushed out now?
What the master plan looks at a 20-year horizon, okay? But the milestones of when you build are demand-driven inside there. Now, they estimate when they think it's going to happen, but it's all subject to being demand-driven. Obviously, you don't want to build things just because it's 2008. You want to build things because you've got the fundamentals of passengers and traffic to support it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Bateman? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
The next,
next budget is 5100, the DOT highway maintenance.
Go ahead.
Good morning once again, Debbie Bashirley, Fiscal Director. In 2012, highway maintenance and transportation services were combined into one department called highway. Highway maintenance maintains the highways. Our biggest customer is the state, and they pay 100%. We get 100% offset for any expenses from the state, and normally that's approximately 80 to 85% of the highway budget. We also, the other part of it is the county highways. The big difference in this year's budget is our GTA has decreased 10%, or approximately $200,000. We still don't know what kind of numbers we're going to get for the RMA and TMAs from the state, but basically those projects that are given...
Excuse me, for those of us who may be new, could you identify some of your acronyms?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maintenance agreements and traffic.
Thank you.
And We will get the numbers from the state as far as what kind of revenues we'll get from that, but they do pay 100% of any projects that are they request us for. And also, in the winter, snow plowing is held harmless. And so what we budgeted was a five-year average of what we've gotten from the state in the past. I can open it up for any questions if you have any. The budget is self-explanatory, but we'll welcome questions.
Thank you, Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad to hear snow plowing is held harmless, but for, if you will, a pedestrian listener, can you explain that term of art, held harmless?
The held harmless, that means no matter what the budget is, whatever it takes to shovel the snow, they will pay.
The state will pay that?
The state will pay, yes.
Very good. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Jerzyk?
Under the transportation aids funding, you indicate a 10% reduction of the allocation from the state, and I think many of us knew that already, but again, this is something now that partial reduction is going to be offset by an increase in the tax levy.
That's correct.
And that to me is an indirect charge of services that should have been covered by the state and now forcibly reduced to the property tax levy. And I just want to know if there's any kind of recourse that the county board has to at least reverse that trend. And perhaps more of a political question than you may care to answer. But
well, it's been trending over the past few years that the funding for that has gone down. And as far as the recourse, I'm not sure if there is one.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, State DOT Secretary formed the commission, as you're all aware of. Supervisor, you appeared in front of it. That commission, it's my understanding, will submit their report sometime in December. One of the items that they are looking at is maintenance. Maintenance of the system is critical, and yet over the years, the state has reduced maintenance. The commission has looked at this, and the commission is going to support, I believe, in the report, an increase in the biennial budget that the state has. The first year will be an increase. I think it might be up as high as $50 million for the state. The second year, what they're telling me, maybe $75 million. But this is an issue that the state needs to close the gap on, because lane miles continue to increase. In Milwaukee County, this is a perfect example, because you have the Marquette Interchange, then you have the North-South, that's expansion project, the Zoo Interchange, expansion project, 94 expansion. All of these projects, they're going to increase lane miles, and at the same time, they're not increasing maintenance. I believe that the state, of course, is headed in that direction. It will be up to the legislature to increase the budget. I hope that answers your question.
It does. It just, I think as elected leaders of our communities, we have a role to play in assisting this department, and I think we need to do this to educate the public. This stuff can be somewhat obtuse, if you will, because it gets hidden in numbers like this. It gets hidden from an immediate understanding, and you know, we just, it's so easy to go out there and say we're not going to increase taxes for anybody, but then again, and as we even heard from Barry Bateman, everybody wants the services, everybody wants the lane miles. We're tired of the you know, the snarls on the Zoo Interchange, for example. We've got to translate that story so everyone understands. When you, for example, get rid of the indexing of gasoline, it has a result, and we have to make sure that we certainly do whatever we're going to do intelligently, but we've got to translate the story, and that's where I get concerned. So I'm I'm going to invite you to help us get some real basic information so we can get it out very basic, understandable, layperson terms. I think we have an obligation to do that, and I look forward to your assistance in that.
Yeah, and you, Supervisor, you will have that.
Thank you.
Again, the RMAs are every county in the state of Wisconsin has one, and all of the counties that I'm familiar with and that I know are expressing the same thing that you're expressing. So, thank you.
And I know people can take Jersey. You're just adding to the problem with 794. Well, you know, there's such a thing as doing intelligent planning and just everybody gets what they want planning. I think planning corridors is a smart thing to do. It can reduce spending for other projects that are all trying to get done. For example, should we widen Highway 32, which is the north-south corridor, or should we plan a good corridor and let those other projects not be expanded? So, you know, there's a way to do things intelligently and to talk about corridors. And by the way, that includes transit. I want to look at transit corridors. I don't believe in these false dichotomies that we can only do one or the other. And if we get that kind of pushback from our governor, we need to call him on it. We need to make sure we've got good information. So that's my political comment on that. I do want to ask about under major maintenance project funding. You've got City of Cudahy traffic cameras at Layton and Packard, 8,000. I wasn't aware of that project. If you could just kind of flesh it out for me. That's on page 239.
Excuse me, I'm Greg Heisler. When we did the intersection at Jason Patrick this last summer, City of Predator, but the traffic signals are our responsibility, and we are installing all the new signals and lights are camera activated now. That way we get rid of the loops that are in the ground. So you'll have a camera on one signal over here, and it'll spot the car over here. Like
if he's in the left turn lane, so that'll activate the green arrow so he can turn left. So that's what that project is about.
Interesting. And is this becoming state of the art then?
Yes.
And is it also useful for emergency vehicles when there's a fire truck with, you know, the sirens going and all that, do they pick up that?
I believe it is. I'm not real familiar with it because I'm not an electrician, but I believe that they are, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Buzulaki is well aware of my great interest in seeing Layton Avenue between Howell and yeah, 794.
The washboard?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Supervisor. Indeed, the washboard. It's really fun to drive down if you're looking, you know, if you're say looking for a bumper car kind of experience. Just go really fast on Layton, not too fast, so we don't want to encourage breaking the law here. Yeah, I know. I am aware that it has been moved up on County DOT's schedule, which is great, and I want to know what more can be done to get it moved up even closer.
Good morning, Supervisors and Supervisor Haas and Mr. Chair. I'm Andrea Weddle-Henning. I'm the Transportation Engineer Manager for Transportation Services. And I know that, Supervisor Haas, you've been very instrumental to get this washboard nice and smooth, and we are working to do that. We will, in 2013, be looking for some funding for the actual project. And once we do get the funding, we'll get going on it right away to start designing it in 2014 and hopefully in the 2014 budget have it ready and set to go so that we can in 2015 do the construction. We have already been kind of coordinating with other municipalities just to make sure that we're not having too many projects in that area being done at the same time. So that will also be something that we'll be looking into. But yes, we want to, as soon as we can, as soon as we do obtain that funding. And that's one of the things Transportation Services likes to do, is to make sure we have a funding match before we decide to do anything differently. So that would be our number one key thing, too. And start maybe just looking at some things on Layton Avenue that we can start preliminarily looking at to make things go a little bit quicker with the design.
Thank you.
thank you for that information. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's still about 3 years away.
I wouldn't say 3 years. When we do get the funding, we can relook at the schedule to see if there is some way that we can expedite it. So once we get towards the 2014 budget, that would be a good time for us to reassess and see if it's something that we could move up a little bit quicker. As you know, a lot of our construction seasons are somewhat short, and we, you know, depending on the weather, like this year we had no rain, so a lot of the projects got done real quickly. So it depends on a lot of things. So we will relook at the schedule again once we do obtain that funding and see if there's some way that we could move it up. But at this time, it's really hard to say without having that funding available.
Yeah, obviously, well, the folks that live along there, and the businesses too, they're affected by it, but the folks that live there, with the semi is going by at night, like, ka-dung, ka-dung, ka-dung. Oof. It's not too pleasant. I do appreciate your attention to this, Ms. Andrea, and Director Buzalaki. And I know that the director has taken an interest in this as well, for which I do appreciate. That said, we do need this done, like many things, yesterday. But I do appreciate this, and this is not to say that I'm going to stop talking about it or being on to you about it, and I thank you specifically, Andrea, for your work on this, for your communication with me on this. This becomes now, okay, how do I tell the folks down there? Mm-hmm. Well, so should we start by holding a bake sale?
Supervisor, that's a good start.
Okay. Finally, I could say I'll make some calls. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other committee members have questions? If not, could you tell me a little bit about the personnel changes box you have and the significant amount of positions you have relative to some other departments that you're adding?
Supervisor, as far as transportation services is concerned, as maybe all of you are aware, late last year we lost about 5 key management engineering positions. So it has been very challenging for transportation services in 2012 to be able to maintain with the staff levels we've had. With the direction of Frank Buzalaki and his support, we were able to get 3 new positions, which have really helped us move forward. And we do have additional positions in the budget to help us get back to where we need to be to generate the revenue and to keep the keep our infrastructure safe. So I really appreciate having the 3 new positions this year and then also having the positions necessary to maintain.
Okay, that was fairly general. Could you be a little more specific? You say you lost positions last year, but then Mr. Buzalaki was able to add some because of his leadership.
Okay.
Could you give us some number of positions lost last year, positions added because of Mr. Buzalaki, and then positions added that you want now?
Okay. Last year we lost 5 positions. We lost the director position, which Buzalaki has filled. We lost a highway operations position. We've lost a transportation engineering management position. We lost a managing engineer traffic position. We lost a construction management engineering position. So those are the ones that we lost in 2011. Prior to that, we did lose 2 additional positions, our revenue contract manager for structures, which is a very important position, and a engineering technician positions. Now, with myself...
So I'm following.
Yes.
Prior to that, you mean, say, in 2010 you lost 2 other positions?
Yes, in 2010. Yes, between 2009 and 2010 we lost those 2 additional positions that I noted, the structural and the engineering technician. We haven't filled any, you know, once we did start shifting positions. None have been built since that time until this year. We did fill 1 managing engineering construction position and 2 construction coordinator positions. We still have, I believe, 3 engineering positions, a resident contract manager highway position, and also two engineering positions. So.
Well, as I read the information on page 6 of 5100 or 240 in our book,
mm-hmm.
Are you adding 6 new positions and transferring in 1? Is that the correct way to read that?
Okay, we are. We're adding.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, just to clarify, there is one. The fiscal and budget manager highway position is transferred in from DAS fiscal, and then I believe what Ms. Weddle-Henning is speaking to is the positions are authorized positions. This is simply attaching the budgeted funding back to those positions so that they can be filled. In other words, they existed, but they didn't have budgeted funding attached to them, just to clarify.
You're comfortable with that answer?
Yes. Supervisor, like I had explained, a lot of the positions, the 5 that did leave, a lot of those have not been filled and are there to be filled. And I do agree with that response.
Any further questions on this item? Supervisor Stamper?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. The new the position under the ones that are funded, is that the same, or is it supposed to reflect this 8.5 change in the position equipment box? Huh? Right here. So the 8.5 increase. Are we discussing those positions?
That includes.
Can you use a microphone, please? Can you use a microphone, please? Thanks.
8.5 increase, are those same positions?
That does include those positions, and basically, there's only going to be 7 new positions. But the 8.4, perhaps you can explain it.
let's hear this one out.
Perhaps you can explain it, James Martin.
I want to hear this.
Chair, Supervisors, this actually is returning to an issue that I think has been raised as we've discussed several of these items. It does account for this position. It also accounts for changes such as hours worked in terms of overtime, budgetary savings taken through vacancy and turnover adjustments. So in addition to the positions, there are those other adjustments that also factor into that number, and so that accounts for the difference.
Okay, excuse me. Are they positions? Is that a position? Okay, we got 5 positions, 1 transferred in, 6, 1 transferred in. So there's 1.5 left out there. Is that a position, or is that what you're saying? Is that a spread? Like last week, it was spread out.
It is not a position, if you will. It's basically accounts for what an equivalent would be of additional hours work. So, for instance, if I have $100,000, just using a round number, and my average salaries are $50,000, that basically is showing me that I'm getting additional hours worked to the equivalent of what would be 2 FTEs. However, that's not an actual position. It represents the additional hours, what the additional hours worked would be as an FTE equivalent. So to answer your question, it's not a position.
Okay. I'm sorry, I forgot the title and your name.
I'm James Martin. I'm a fiscal analyst in the Department of Administrative Services.
Okay. Mr. Who?
Martin.
Mr. Martin, how many departments do this type of funding? If the position doesn't reflect the actual number of positions, how do we know that, number one, adequately have enough staff, and the money is being used properly? Well, how many departments, how else do you do this?
Chair, supervisors, I think the general question that you're asking is, for instance, if I'm in a position, I occupy one position, but I may have to work additional hours beyond the normal hours that are allocated, and that's just kind of reflecting what the cost of the true hours that are anticipated to be worked are. And these are mechanisms that we have to use to account for the financials, to account for that financial impact.
Got that?
So that can happen in any department throughout this whole budget. That can happen in any position.
Sure.
You want to take a shot at this one?
Why not just put more positions? If you have, why don't you put 10 and only reflect 6?
I think as we, Chairman and Supervisors, I think as we discussed last week, there is a distinction between actual positions and the FTE count. The FTE count is the full-time equivalency based on 2,088 hours worked. So what this table is showing you is that in terms of net added increased positions, we have 7 positions. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at 2 for the construction coordinator, the 1 engineering tech, the transportation design and construction manager, 2 engineers, and a fiscal and business manager. Mm-hmm. That adds to 7 mm-hmm. positions, if you will. We have budgeted 8.5 FTE hours. So there is an increase in funding for that go above and beyond the actual positions by 1.5. So when you're looking at FTEs, that's full-time equivalency versus the total number of existing positions or bodies, if you will, in terms of those positions. So that 1.5 represents additional funding available to the department for various based on various factors.
Yeah, I understand that. Additional funding. So does that supports the department?
And if I might add, and I want to just confirm with Mr. Martin that the 1.5 is budgeted mostly in overtime. So we have time and a half of about 1.5 FTEs relative to overtime to fund, you know, additional work beyond the normal 40-hour week. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
So that's how you budget overtime. So that potentially
flows into your FTE count.
Okay.
Yes,
that's great.
Thank you. Supervisor Lipscomb and Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I may actually be starting to understand that, which is scary.
Yeah.
can you tell me, is there, because I really, even though I haven't been on the committee, I've always attended these meetings pretty faithfully, and I don't recall this really coming up before. Can you tell me, has there been any accounting change, or is there something policy-wise that you're budgeting more overtime, or did we have a lot of vacancy and turnover that we were accounting for before that we're finally reflecting?
I can't explain it based on past practice. I haven't been here all that long either, but I'm being told that, no, there has been no change relative to the application of FTE. These discrepancies between FTE and your position count have occurred in the past, is my what I'm being told.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this conversation and the one we had the other day with the same issue, I can't help but feel like a fool, and I don't want to self-proclaim that. So I feel like at least myself, maybe some of my colleagues, need a little bit of educating from DOST Fiscal. I'd like to formally request that DOST Fiscal prepare a white paper or briefing on this in print, giving textbook-style examples, and that they consider the possibility of in the future, instead of simply reporting FTE, also reporting what that translates to in number of jobs and number of people to fill those jobs, because there is very clearly a difference between the three numbers of the accounting for the number of hours to be worked, which I'm understanding is the FTE, versus the number of job slots available, versus the number of people that fill them based on whether or not it's authorized to be filled and funded. Would that be possible, please, Mr. Chairman?
We can certainly provide that. We'll work up those textbook examples right away.
Well, if someone could provide it just maybe for our understanding right now, how many people work in this department where it says 128.1? How many actual bodies are there? How many work every day?
I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that. Actual bodies.
This is.
And then how many? No, can you tell me how many actually you would expect next year? As opposed to the 136.6 bodies that, you know, how many actual bodies would be there? Does Daz have an answer to that?
It would be 1.5 less than the 136.6, right, because you're adding 7. So I guess we can definitely, and I think I suggested this last week, that we actually list out the number of positions alongside the FTE. I think that provides the additional clarity that you're seeking, and that's definitely a good change. Improves the transparency on the budgeting. One thing that I'd like to add is that it's difficult to get to an actual filled versus a vacant position. That's almost a managerial issue where you can't really identify. I mean, at any point in time, a position could be filled or unfilled pending. So we can definitely give you the FTE and the position count. I think whether a position is actually filled, a funded position is actually filled, that's a different matter. And so we can provide that at a certain point in time, but that kind of goes one step beyond just the budget presentation.
Okay, and then you can get us some numbers, how many people
that you'll get it.
Great. Can you give it to our clerk, maybe in an email, and then she can distribute
it
to
all. Sure. I'll send that out right away.
Did you have anything more, Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up to the last comments, I can appreciate that the number of people filled in the slots at any one time is fluid with the economy and management, et cetera. I can appreciate, you know, an asterisk disclaimer that says, you know, as of this date we had, or here are what our intentions are. I just think this needs to be a little more, bit more transparent, so that we don't have to repeatedly spend a lot of time trying to understand conceptually what FTE means. It shouldn't be a difficult concept, and I think we're just speaking different languages here. So just, you know, a white paper with some clarity, examples, and maybe a change in the method of reporting in the future would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier you discussed turnover in your departments. And Ms. Whittle-Henning, specifically, you're about to lose one of your highway folks today. Mr. Schmelzer, yeah? Please give him my best regards and thanks. He's been very helpful, and I'll miss working with him.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Mm-hmm. Anything further? You got something?
Yeah, I just want to add something to the report. You add the which departments are actually funding for overtime, so putting in additional funding for overtime.
We know
it was last week that was, I don't remember, but today is the airport. So, as a department, that also wants to have extra overtime funding. And also, do the department heads have access to this funding, and are they aware of this? Are you guys aware of this funding?
Yes. We, Supervisor, basically our funding is, our overtime funding is for snow plowing and safety and emergencies.
Mm-hmm. So you know how much is available, how much to access at any given time?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, so just add it to the report. Thank you very much.
Anything further? Supervisor Schmidt.
My quick question is, Chuck Smeltzer is retiring today, correct? What time is the party?
11 o'clock.
That's what I thought. I'm wondering if I can
mark.
Give him our
one.
Best if we don't make it.
Till 1. Until 1 o'clock.
Thank you. If not, I think that completes this order.
No. Minute. I have a couple questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Supervisor Mayor, I didn't see
you. You can see me.
Scott, you're here. I didn't see you. Motion for...
No. Well, one thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to know, do they have the funding for 13 for all the projects in place right now?
Supervisor, we are. There are three projects that we didn't get funded in the 2013 budget.
Okay, I mean, what do you still for the ongoing project you have now? You
yes, the ongoing projects we do have funding for.
Okay, what you are also, what I'd like to know, is there any bodies that you need to make sure that you maintain what you have to do in your accounting or your engineering spots that's not in this budget?
Supervisor, yes, we do have two engineers that are currently in the budget for this year that we would need to fill in order to maintain the funding and the project deadlines we have for our five-year capital plan. Also, a very important aspect of the transportation services is the county side of it. As the five individuals left this past 2011, there were a lot of county needs and accounting things that needed to be restored and looked at and reconciled. We do need some support when it comes to our county procedures and policies so that we can maintain our current level of DOT funding and be able to smoothly transition our projects from beginning to closure. So I would say that we would need some accounting help with our department.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, when you get the white paper or the paper that she stated, can you make sure that the whole board get that?
Sure.
Because,
is that mic on? Because I'm.
You can't hear me?
I can hear you, but barely, and I don't know if anybody else can.
Oh, okay. Tennessee, I have a very strong voice.
You have a very strong.
So I'd like to make sure that the board have that paper, because some of the accounting methods may be the same, but it seems like a little different, especially how they are doing the overtime and filling a budget, filling the slot with the FTEs and stuff like that. So I want to make sure I understand exactly, because when we all vote on this budget, we have the same concept. Because I've been hearing the conversation, and that is a new conversation that I'm hearing right now about how they are changing some things. If you look at the past, just go back to it, you can see overtime, budgeting, and everything else in there. And if there was filled and unfilled, people, you could tell this position is funded but unfilled. And so it's a little bit different. So when the gentleman made that statement, I'm like, it's a little different. So they have a different concept they are doing right now. And make sure that everyone have that, because when Supervisor Stanford made that suggestion, and I'm really getting to it, it's really padding a budget. So, it's for overtime, and they're going to manage their budget where they want. But it's padding that we have to look at it a little bit closely and see where is there... where the money should be and where it should not be. And thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Madam Clerk, when you get that information from DOS, can you make sure that every board member gets a copy? Thank you. Anything further on this argument? If not, thank you.
The next department we'll be discussing is 5300, the fleet management.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, Supervisors, Dan Gaden, Fleet Director. Fleet Management's division budget this year, pretty much the same as last year. We are continuing with our fleet replacement program that we have in place. And this year we are adding the five-digit mowing equipment into the fleet replacement program. we have increased our parts budget by... or DAS has increased it to match the 2011 actuals that we have to kind of come closer to what we had for actuals. And other than that, I'm available to take any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Gaden? Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at page 3 of your budget, 245 in our binders.
Mm-hmm.
There's a paragraph there titled Fleet Reduction at the end of the page.
Yes.
And it describes an intention to eliminate up to 17 fleet-owned vehicles that are fully depreciated from the sheriff's fleet in 2013 as a result of each of those vehicles having logged less than 5,000 miles of use over a recent 12-month period.
Yes.
Could you share with us what the sheriff's department's communication with you or you with them has been on that issue?
We haven't discussed that yet. We're waiting to see when the fleet management budget passes. I will work with the sheriff's department very closely on the vehicles that need to be that are in place for reduction. They're part of our fleet replacement program, and with the reduction in the sheriff's department, we've felt that we could reduce the vehicles also. If they don't have the staff to operate them, there's no reason for us to have the extra vehicles sitting around. So we work very closely with the sheriff's department in reducing vehicles if there is a reduction in the sheriff's department.
Mr. Chairman, then, are we to conclude that if the staffing of the sheriff's department were not cut as severely as sometimes proposed, that we would need to also look at an adjustment here?
Those vehicles are already in the fleet replacement program. We did not take them out of the fleet replacement program as of yet, but it could be something that would be done in future.
And, Mr. Chairman, do we know why those vehicles haven't been used?
I couldn't answer that, Supervisor. That'd be the Sheriff's Department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Supervisor Jerzyk?
I think Supervisor Alexander asked an excellent question. I didn't think I would answer her. If we restore sheriff positions, are we going to have to address the fleet management budget to make sure that those restored deputies have sufficient vehicles?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, you will not. As it stands right now, the fleet replacement program is still fully functional as if those deputies were there. If those deputies are reduced, then we reduce the purchasing that we would purchase for vehicles.
So this is only purchasing?
Yes.
But you indicate 20 vehicles in the sheriff's fleet have less than 5,000 miles of use over a 12-month period. Those vehicles are going to be reduced from the fleet, am I correct?
Only if there's a cut in the sheriff's budget for personnel.
Only if there's a cut?
Yes.
Is one of those vehicles the command center?
No, Supervisor.
Thank you.
Anything further? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
The next budget is $5,800, the DOT Director's Office.
Debbie Bishun again for the 5800 Director's Office. In the Director's Office, the service and cross-charge the other departments in DOT, including the airport, transit, transportation, and fleet. Mr. Buzalaki and the fiscal staff and administration staff are there. The budget is pretty much status quo from 2012. We did eliminate we unfunded the manager of transportation planning and a deputy director and grants development manager were created. I'll open it up if you have any other questions.
These weren't any of those positions that were earlier referenced as being lost from the department, right? Like Mr. Buzalaki, have you?
No, they weren't.
Have you acted without a deputy director of transportation since you've been here?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
And is there any way to you know, we have a couple other requests, I think, for grants people.
Yes, I have the request for a grant director. Yes.
Is there any way to that we can, if we do fund that person this year, to next year trace to see if it's been worth the effort?
We could certainly do that, Mr. Chairman. I do feel very confidently that the grant director is going to prove to be very valuable to the county. But certainly, whatever you so choose, you know, we could do that.
I don't know if DAS has some way to measure a grant writer's effort and
Chairman, Supervisors, Waldorf can absolutely track revenue brought in, salary went out. We're also hoping that this, if there is space for this position, that it could possibly look at as a shared service that could be cross-charged out if there is space. We're hoping that the capacity is there just skill set-wise, and then from there we will hopefully translate that and possibly have conversations in future budgets about if this is a position that should reside in a specific department or if it should be at a staff level that has a broader reach. But right now there are definitely federal and state grants that we think we could be achieving it that we're not.
Where else besides the transportation area would you see it?
Child support services, just generally family care, kind of looking at how different organizations function within that service, health and human needs, things like that.
Mr. Buzalaki, would you have any problems having this grant writer help in other departments?
Oh, not at all. I really think, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, that this is really one of the reasons, why I wanted to do this, because I believe that we'll be able to come back and show you that we're missing the boat in a lot of areas. This is not just about transportation. You know, this is there. If you have an experienced grant writer and someone that can recognize the various websites and the funding that's available, but that person has to be experienced. And once they start recognizing this and we go after these grants, I have no problem sharing that person. I have no problem transferring that person, for example, out of my department into DOS or wherever. I just think that the county is, we're missing the boat here. And I think this is a real opportunity for us to really pick up some. I mean, the money is out there. If you look at the federal budget, it's incredible the amount of grants that are out there. So,
thank you. Supervisor Roman West and Supervisor Jerzyk.
Thank you, Mr. Buzalaki, for your vision on that. And I actually shared that vision. And when the chairwoman was in front of us, I expressed that I was a little disappointed. I actually added a grant writer position into this county board staff, I want to say 3 years ago, and we have never filled that position. It's a full-time position. But the purpose behind it is, you're absolutely correct, is that there's so much money out there that really all you need to do is just sit and have someone to do a focused, search for it, and then sit down and have the expertise in order to be able to write those grants. My staff and my office and I, we have taken a grant writing class. We're all able to write grants. I write grants for Kosciuszko Community Center and other places, or I make other departments aware of grants while I'm doing grant searches, because this is, this is how you get things done. And the city of Milwaukee has a whole department that is, and it's specifically for their street, that is just for looking for grants to help us fix the streets, the streetscaping, and other things like that. And my district has been a great recipient of that. On National Avenue, we have streetscapes. We've had two main street projects. And so I think, you're absolutely, this is a great use of, I believe this is a great use of our county's taxpayer dollars in order to be able to maximize. And I look forward to getting a report back and seeing just how well this has worked. I think some of our most successful, the departments with the most successful programming are the departments that use grants, the Parks Department, DHHS, the wraparound program, which is a nationally renowned program, started off as a grant. And so I think this is, you're right on, and I really want to applaud you for your vision on this.
Well, thank you, Supervisor. And I just one last thing about this. I think there's a lot of good examples, and the supervisor is absolutely correct about the city of Milwaukee, and Craig, being over at the city, I'm sure he saw some of this. But there are situations that come up. There's different federal bills come along, if you have people that recognize when this bill comes out and that there's dollars available, how to apply for them. And in closing, I'll tell you there's just one that I will remember the rest of my life, and that was when President Obama was elected. They put all that money in for passenger rail, and we applied for a grant, and we got $823 million. So that's just an example of what can happen with things like this.
Supervisor Jersey?
I would encourage you to fight for your grant writer and don't share them. If DOS wants a grant writer, go and get your grant writer and put it in your budget, because I know you probably have enough projects that could just do transportation. And before Sue Black got fired, she used some of her administrative people to write a lot of grants for parks and has done that all along. Good directors understand where grants are in their area, and they write all kinds of grants. Sue Black constantly got her budget reduced and was able to fill holes, a lot of it, through grant writing. So, you know, you have a good director who recognizes those things. And as long as we're on passenger rail, we're right now in danger of losing our Milwaukee crew for Amtrak. So be careful with that stuff, and we need to be fighting for our passenger rail here in Milwaukee. I guess I have some inside information on that once in a while, but you know, the thing I get worried about with grants is you get elected officials who want to support their own agendas. So they collect all the revenues out of the local communities, and they take it upstairs, if you will, and then they pass legislation which requires people to do grants. So, you know, we lose support in other areas of our budget. That translates into more property tax dollars, and we have to apply for grants to get under their silo, if you will, of their agenda. And that's something that's bothered me for a while, because the local officials, in my opinion, and I'm very proud to be a supervisor, I have no intention of going upstairs anywhere, because I like representing the local folks. But it does irritate me that the folks that go upstairs keep writing all the special legislation so that we somehow have to get on their agendas in order to get money for it. So Director Buzlocki, I applaud you for putting this in. Fight for your grant writer. If DOS wants a grant writer, let them put the money in the budget and come to us. Thank you.
Chairman, may I just correct the record? I by no means was taking the grant writer away. It was looking if there is space in future years, pending time, allocation, dollars, revenue brought in. There is a very technical aspect to federal and state grants, which could possibly be shared amongst county departments. But each department specifically has very legislatively driven goals, so that obviously there would need to be some significant planning.
When you say space, are you talking office space?
Yeah, at the city. No.
Yeah, we got a couple over there right now. So.
No, space, like in a time, like if they're finding 7 hours a day to do DOT, but they have the remaining 1.5 hours. That is not being booked.
You've got a lot of space up there. I'm just using it.
No, space in a day.
Space in a day. Supervisor Stamper and Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Supervisor West's sentiments regarding this position. So I like to see this grant writer primary focus be on transit, then maybe parks, then maybe spread throughout. But transit, I like to see the focus for. Especially with the county in dire need of an additional source of income. So I'm happy to see this in the budget. That's what I was going to ask earlier. When we created the other grant writing position, where was that and what happened to that one? As long as we get one, that's fine with me. So I support this. Thank you very much.
Supervisor Mayo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This time I have to, and I really agree with the third floor, but Ms. Terry does not say that she was trying to take the grant writer. I'm selfish, and I want the grant writer for transportation and public works, because we need all the help in the world. But if you can share the grant writer, we got to make sure that grant writer has the tools and personnel to work on those projects. And I really thank Mr. Bojowski And I know Supervisor West, and I voted for it, but we did not have that opportunity. But I think Milwaukee County, regardless, we all here as a family. We need to make sure that we bring the tax, property tax down. But we also need transportation as the heartbeat of the economic development for Milwaukee County. And if we show that this grant writer can do an excellent job, like they have done in other places within Milwaukee County, there's nothing wrong to share that expertise. And so thank you for my comments.
Thank you. Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to ask the director, would this grant writer, let's say if there's another opportunity to apply for CMAQ funds, would it be under your department, or would MCTS have to have their own grant writer to write, let's say, for a grant of that size?
Supervisor, Mr. Chairman, my vision for this is that we would also work with transit in getting whatever grants are out there for transit, and again on the highway side and the airport. I might add that there are a lot of federal grants that come through the FAA, so this is all, you know, all going to encompass our department, and we're going to work very closely with Lloyd Grant and his folks over there on getting this done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Camels, did you have a response to that too, or?
No, I think we just wanted to add that half the time for this position is in transit, charged to transit, and the other half is charged to the airport. So I just want to provide that clarification.
Okay. Thanks. Supervisor Schmidt?
I'll answer the question. I did have that. I guess we beat a dead horse a little bit, but certainly the point is here is we saw in the budget we started off with, and they talked about, of course, in transportation particularly, how dependent we are on state aid, how dependent we are on federal revenue, federal aid. And we saw in both these cases, we've seen what's happened in the last few years. We've all seen the steady cycle of state shared revenue, transportation. We're getting less and less all the time from the state and the federal government. Now, hopefully, we're not going to give up on that. We have lobbyists, and we've got to keep working on that. I know with Milwaukee, we've had a lot of our people go up to the state. We've got to continue to do that, by the way. Those connections are very important. You don't want to go to them just when you need something. You want to keep those relationships going. I think it's been an important part that this director has brought to the table here, especially with the state and the zoo interchange and different things. Obviously, if you have the loss of revenue, state shared revenues, the revenues from the state and the federal government, you have to make it up somewhere. That's in grants. And so we've all talked about this today, and we want to encourage it. And it'd be interesting, I think it would be good for PR and see other departments, too, to see exactly, you know, what kind of revenues in the next year we can bring in. You should take some credit for some of those things. And it's important for us to know the more we get there, the less tax levy we have to put in. And, of course, that's always a concern for all of us. So I think we've all encouraged that same point. So the last little point I guess I would ask, since I just took the floor now, is the deputy director. You worked without one. We've got other positions we're filling. Obviously, it's a need you feel. The grant writer, you know, it seems to be something we all would agree on. Would you like to state your case again why you need a deputy director at this time? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Well, it just would be helpful for me to have someone that could work with my budget director and the rest of the staff supervisor in implementing the different things that we want to do in the department. And we have a lot of projects. We want to grow this department, and that's in anticipation of growing the department. So that's really the reason for it.
I have just a quick follow-up. Is that, we always talk about revenues. Revenues is the other point we talk about. What can you point to specifically what revenues you brought in or what you hope to bring in more in your area?
Well, again, on the highway side, that's why we're asking to add the engineers, because that's where we get our revenue, is the more of these projects that we can do and the more capacity we have to do these projects, we'll bring more revenue in to the department. So, there's the hope that we can expand there, And again, I think it would be helpful to have this person, overlooking some of the things that we're doing at the airport with me.
Thank you.
Anything further on this one? Oh, sorry, Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My last question about the grant writer. Two questions, actually, about the grant writer position. First, Mr. Wazowski, what is the status of getting that position filled?
My understanding, Supervisor, Mr. Chairman, is that it's we're waiting for HR to assign a number, and that'll bring it to me, and then I will immediately do an advertisement for that position, and then do interviews. I believe that this is a very specialist field, so that's why I want to get it advertised so I can get it out into the media and post it. But we need to get it released, which my understanding is it will be. It's imminent, and then I'll start that process.
Thank you. And Mr. Campbell mentioned the grant writer would be split apparently between two functions: the transit and another one.
The transit. Well, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Frank.
Well, it's the transit. Yeah, half is transit, and the other half would be the airport. That's how it's funded.
Okay, so transit and the airport.
Yes.
Highways?
Yes, the highways will. There won't be any funding coming out of highways, but certainly this director or this grant director is going to be working on the federal side, specifically federal highways.
Okay. Okay. I just grew a little concerned when I.
Oh no! No no! Yeah. Layton Avenue. I haven't forgotten.
Oh, did I mention that?
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Anything further than on this org unit? If not, we can move to the next one.
Next budget is $5,600, Milwaukee County Transit Paratransit.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Lloyd Grant, Managing Director for the Transit System. Joining me to my right is our Chief Financial Officer, Herbert Malinger. Thank you for this opportunity to address you on the requested 2013 budget for transit and paratransit services. The budget plan, and I'm really pleased to come before you this morning to share with you a budget plan that maintains current service levels for our fixed route services and our paratransit services. Fares are also maintained at the 2012 adopted budget level. Net tax levy decreases about $195,000 compared to the 2012 adopted budget. A key programmatic change for fiscal year 2013 is increased funding for bus security. By adding $500,000 to ensure that passengers have a pleasant and uneventful ride. Today, we have about 325 buses operating in peak service. That translates to about 27,000 hours of service per week. However, at the same time, we only have about 828 hours of security service available for the transit system in any given week. This funding request increases the number of security officers that will be on board our buses, so that means putting boots on the buses. Those officers will be available during peak hours, during weekdays, and also this funding request allows us to expand security coverage on weekends, both Saturdays and Sundays, and fill some gaps that are currently in the system. With that, if there are any questions, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I can address those.
If there was any attempt to reduce the paratransit fare, how would that impact your budget, say if it was reduced by 50 cents or a dollar or something like that?
If I heard you correctly, Mr. Chairman, that was if there was an attempt? I would have to look at that and to determine what the revenue impact. There would definitely be a decrease in revenue, but I don't have a guesstimate as to what that amount would be at this point in time, depending on whether that was a 50 cents or 75 cents or a dollar decrease. But I can certainly provide you with that information, Mr. Chairman, if you would desire to have it.
Thank you. Okay, if you could share that with our clerk and she could pass that along to the committee, because I know that's a very, that sometimes can be very difficult for some of the persons using the service. Supervisor Schmidt, you had a follow-up to that?
Yes. I think you're going there is that in savings, you have this looks like an incredible number to me, $325,000 less rise. Part of it, you say, is because of this we're moving to the new Freedom Initiative. Maybe we could have just a short explanation of that, how that's going to pick up. You presume many of those $325,000. How many rides are we given in this the new Freedom Initiative that's supposed to help have many less disability rides from our paratransit, correct? And then there's substantial savings here if you're serving 325,000 less people. Is the savings eaten up? I guess where would they be eaten up? The savings from so 325,000 less rides. I'm having a little hard time with that. Maybe you could try to describe that a little bit. In this Freedom Initiative I talked about, where those savings might be in this budget.
Okay,
that'd be my question.
Thank you. Let me try to tackle that and then defer to our financial officer to add anything. With respect to what we're currently seeing in terms of reduced paratransit ridership, the reduction in rides is largely being seen by fewer clients of managed care organizations utilizing the paratransit services. The second largest factor that we see is the impact of the New Freedom Program, where we are providing free rides for individuals with disabilities and wheelchairs, and we certainly have seen a steady increase over the last 2 years with the number of individuals in wheelchairs utilizing the fixed route bus service. Now, with respect to the latter part of your question, Supervisor, as to how are those reduced costs being used or factored into this budget, the overall savings is about $1.5 million, roughly. And so in this budget, we propose to use $500,000 to cover the increased in security services for the transit system. The balance is largely attributed to inflationary increases in the budget as it relates to materials as well as wages.
Go ahead.
Okay, I guess I have to look at that a little bit, but let me ask you a question directly for you or someone else who works at this. Is you know, we're looking at jobs, we're looking at the Sheriff's Department, and they have a role to play in protection also for our county buses. We pay how much for security right now? Black and Hunt, what's our total outlay for protection on the buses for our security?
The annual outlay currently is $920,000 annually.
Okay. What is their response, or how do you get involved? Do you make overtures to the police, this WAC and Hunt bill, when they don't have enough people with boots on the ground? As we say, we went through this argument a couple of years ago, how many people are in the offices, how many are boots on the ground, how many should be riding the buses. I hope we change that percentage pretty significantly if we have more people on the buses than we have roaming around. So we continue that. Okay. What is your, I guess I'm trying to look at a somewhat touchy issue here, but to look at the Sheriff's Department, how much do you expect from the Sheriff's Department? Is WAC and Hunt that, you know, when they need backup, is there any way? I mean, you know the routes that have the most problems, the most ridership, you know, when most students are on, okay. Do you ask for Milwaukee Police on those things too? Does WAC and Hunt realize that they need more backup? You know, you have that $920,000 put into that budget. Is that sufficient? Should we be looking to Milwaukee Police, or not Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, to help more in this area? I guess I'm looking for your experience in transportation and security. You get $500,000 more, okay, then I'll go to WAC and Hunt. Do you try to parcel this out in other areas? I'd like to know how that money's going to be used. and what role Milwaukee County, the Sheriff's Department, plays, if any, in your security for your buses. I'd like to hear your comment on that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, currently the Sheriff's Department is not playing any role at all with respect to security on buses. Since January 1st, we have been contacting the local municipal police departments when there's a need for law enforcement assistance on our buses. The request for increased funding is to add additional security personnel with respect to G4S Wackenhut, who currently provides that security service. Their activities are largely preventative and to help contain problems on the buses, which we have seen have been relatively flat over the last 3 years, so we have not necessarily seen an increase in problems, but they nevertheless do occur. And the additional funding, again, will allow us to broaden that coverage and to ensure that we have security personnel on the problem routes where they need to be and when they need to be there.
My last thought would be, thank you, is that I would like to see, we had this once, breakdown as far as how many man hours are on buses versus how many people, you know, they go to different bus stops. I know they have calls with each other. It seems to me the more presence, you know, pretty obvious, isn't it? The more presence you have on the buses, especially those buses and routes, which you certainly are very well aware of, they're the most populated, you know, you have student influx at the end of the day or at the beginning of the day, and you have everybody going to work at the peak hours like everything else. Okay, I'm sure you have statistics on that, and I want to know if you feel satisfied that you're getting, especially you're getting this extra money. I want to know what this extra money is being used for. I mean, you gave me a general answer. I know you don't have all the specifics, but okay, we need $500,000 more for protection. Well, okay, why? Right? You know, we've had some problems in the buses, but it's almost when we look at malls or something, you know, we look at neighbor malls and say, well, they had all these incidents. They have millions of people there every year, okay? If you look at the total rides we have and, you know, the millions of passengers that we have the buses every year, okay? I know one is too much. We always go to that, okay? But I like to get a little breakdown. I think maybe we all be interested in finding out, you know, how are these hours being used? Okay, to your satisfaction, I mean, are they using now, we switched that percentage around drastically, I couldn't give you the specifics, but it was almost double the amount of hours that we were putting people in the buses themselves. Okay, so I want to know what that breakdown is again, and I want to know how the breakdown will be different once we get this $500,000, what this money really be used for. What was the reason for giving this? Was there just general clamor that the security wasn't good enough? And I know if the perception gets out that then we lose rides. We know how important rides are to the bus system. We're all for having a bus system in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. We need it. So is that too much, or do you understand where I'm going on that?
I understand the request, Supervisor. I can tell you we will put some information together for you. At the present time, just in brief, about 67% of the hours spent by our CPOs are, in fact, riding the buses. We anticipate that increase into just slightly over 70% as a result of this increase. And so what I will do is provide you with that information, as well as what this translates into in terms of the number of officers, as well as how their time will be deployed over the course of a day and the weekends as well. We'll provide you with that information.
That'd be appreciated. Thank you.
Supervisor Stamper, Supervisor Alexander, and Supervisor Mayo, Supervisor Jersey, then. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Grant, what is your assessment of the security company? Are they doing a good job? Are they doing a fair job? How are they doing?
Supervisor, I think that for the resources that we have to work with, G4S is doing an excellent job for the transit system. They certainly are fulfilling the terms of their contract. Their focus primarily is to contain problems on the buses and to be there to prevent problems from occurring. That is one of the key aspects of the security program. The other side of the program is really reacting to issues that may occur. GS4 certainly has been demonstrated, capability of handling problems that occur on the buses, but when it becomes necessary to request assistance from law enforcement, then we have to go that extra step.
Okay. And you said the $500,000 increase is not due to an increase in incidents. You just want more security?
I do believe that there is a need for additional security for this system. I think a supervisor mentioned that certainly there's perception, and that perception may not be accurate, that the buses are unsafe. And I think that it's important that we continue to do everything that we can to make sure that our riders have an uneventful ride, that they feel safe riding the buses, as well as our drivers.
When was the contract implemented? When did you first have the contract? When did this contract start with Wackener?
I would have to get back to you on that, Supervisor. I want to give you an accurate answer. I believe the contract started in 2010. It's a five-year contract, but I would need to verify that.
Okay. And do we have anything in place before then? Was there any security system in place before Wackener?
No, we did not. Not prior to Wackenhut.
Okay. Wacker, what is it? What are they called? Wacker who?
G4S Wackenhut.
Wackenhut. Okay. Would you be able to provide me the statistics for when they began versus when they were not here?
Yes.
Tell me the difference of the impact of Wackenhut. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My first question is that Mr. Grant mentioned a few moments ago that the Sheriff's Department does not respond and that municipalities do. I'm wondering if it's the Sheriff's Department that is being called and they are declining to respond, or how those calls are being placed.
Supervisor, it's my understanding that we infrequently have a need to contact the Sheriff's Office as it relates to security incidents on buses. Since January of this year, we were instructed to contact local municipal police departments if assistance, law enforcement assistance, was needed on the buses. The local municipal police departments, particularly the City of Milwaukee Police Department, has been extremely responsive to our requests for assistance when it's needed.
Thank you. My next question, Mr. Chairman, I apologize if this has been in the news at all and I've missed it. I've heard through private sources that within the past week, 4 G4S guards on one bus were attacked by a mob of people on the bus and that a driver's life was put in danger. I'm wondering if that can be confirmed or denied, if that actually occurred.
Now, I am aware that last week there was an incident involving some passengers and four of our security officers on one of our buses. The problem was contained. I am not aware that the driver was put at risk or at risk at any time. The driver was in a protective enclosure, which we refer to as a protective security shields, and the incident occurred midway of the bus rather than anywhere near where the driver was seated. So I'm not aware of that issue.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if Mr. Grant has any information available as to how long the law enforcement response time was on that call, since it was so recent.
I do not know at this point. I can get you that information, Supervisor.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, looking at page 252 in our binders, page 4 of this unit's budget, there's a fare structure on the bottom half of the page that details the different types of fares and their costs to the public. I'm wondering if anyone here today has a breakdown of the estimated revenue per fare type or the quantity of fare types in a given time period, whether that's per year or average per month available, or if that can be sent to this committee.
Supervisor, Mr. Chairman, we would have to provide that information, a breakdown of the revenue, projected revenue from each fare type.
Per fare type, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Then, Mr. Chairman, my next question is looking at that same page at the change column from 2012 to 2013. It appears that spending on transit in this department is going down from 2012 to 2013, and I find it strange given just the rhetoric of, you know, transit has so many needs, it's always a top concern of the county board. I'm curious as to Mr. Grant or Doss's explanation as to why we would be reducing transit funding.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the budget that we put together was designed to be in line with the tax levy target that the department was given, and this reflects that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We talked a little bit about the G4S organization providing security. I'm wondering what the status of our contract is with G4S. If that is a contract that goes until a certain date, do we have the power to annul that contract, etc.?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, as I mentioned earlier, I will confirm when the contract expires for you. It is a five-year contract. I believe it expires in 2015, but I want to be certain and provide you with accurate information, and we can certainly get that to you shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering what the current status is of the Farebox project. I know we normally get updated reporting on that, but given that we're here today and that's directly related to the budget, I think it's a good concern to raise.
The fare collection project is moving on schedule. I will be speaking before the Transportation and Public Works Committee on the status of the project this coming Wednesday. So we'll have an update for you on that at that time, including the where we are in the design phase with respect to the fare structure.
And, Mr. Chairman, my last question is regarding the status of implementing driver shields, having those installed on the buses, where we're at in that process, and if there's anything that could be done to speed that process along in light of Mr. Grant's admitted need for heightened security.
Okay. As an update on the driver protector shields, as part of the 2012 adopted budget, transit was directed to include protective shields in all future bus purchases, and we have taken steps to do that. Currently, there is a request for proposal on the streets as we speak for 55 buses that are expected to be delivered in 2013. That RFP specifies the protective shields are to be included on the delivery of those buses. The other step that we are proactively taking, which coincides with comments that you've heard Mr. Buzalaki make here today, is that we will be actively seeking out grants to assist us in the funding needed to retrofit the balance of the fleet. I would anticipate, short of additional funding becoming available in the near future, it will probably take from 2 to 3 years to retrofit the balance of the fleet. But that largely depends on what funding may be available, and I'm speaking of federal funding that could assist us in that project.
Mr. Chairman, I'm curious if Mr. Grant has a estimate dollar amount required for retrofitting the fleet.
Yes, Supervisor. The estimated cost for materials is in a range of $1,500 to $1,800 per shield. That does not include the labor cost for installation.
And the number of buses that need to be retrofitted, not including any that would be going out of service in the next 24 months?
I would have to confirm that number, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor. Let me give you a number from my, just doing a math here in my head. When I subtract out the 55 buses that will be coming in next year with shields, that should leave about 320 to 325 buses that will need to be retrofitted with protective shields.
Anything further, Supervisor Alexander?
No, thank you, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Supervisor Mayo, then we have Supervisor Jurczyk and Supervisor Bowen.
I'm fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're fine? Okay. Supervisor Jurczyk?
Okay. First of all, in response to Supervisor Alexander's question, you stated, and I tried to write the quote down, you were instructed in January, you were instructed with regard to security to call the the local municipal jurisdictions, correct?
That's correct, Supervisor.
Who instructed you to do that?
I'll have to think of the name, but I spoke with a an individual at the Sheriff's Department, but I don't recall the name at the moment. I can verify that.
So the Sheriff's Department instructed you to do that?
Yes, I was speaking with a commander in the Sheriff's Department.
That the Sheriff would not provide security on buses?
Well, what I was told, Supervisor, is that we have G4S there to respond to calls, and that if that should be our first line of response, we should then contact local police departments for assistance, and if necessary, then call the Sheriff's Department. And as I indicated earlier, you know, for the most part, the local municipal police departments have responded 99.9% of the time.
Okay. And you're adding $500,000 or 55% increase for funding for the buses with bus security based on your budget highlight here. I'd like to ask that you work with the Sheriff's Office in telling them what your plan is for that additional security, what routes, et cetera. And I would like to know, Mr. Grant, that the Transit Department is going to work with the Sheriff's Department. Okay. I think we've had a new coming to the minds, if you will, that departments are going to work together.
Sure.
And we're all in this together. So I would like to know you're doing that. With regard to the fare structure that is on page 252, does this fare structure still include transfers, pay for transfers?
Yes, it does, Supervisor.
I thought it was pretty clear at the Transportation Committee in which we discussed transfers, we asked for a budget that wouldn't include pay for transfers. Mm-hmm. Is there any planning for that going on?
Since the last Transportation and Public Works Committee meeting, I've had some extensive discussion with Supervisor Mayo, who has asked us to revisit our plans, if you will, to come up with a plan that would allow for the earliest possible elimination of paper transfers. And we are working on that as we speak, and I'm having some discussion with the director's office on that subject as well.
Do we have a number that translates into getting rid of paper transfers? Do you have a number today?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Budgetary number.
I do not have a budgetary number at this moment.
I'm going to ask for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I, for one, am not going to approve this budget with paper transfers in it. I don't know how the rest of the committee feels about that, but this is threatening people. This is putting people in harm's way. This has been an issue that's been before this board for a long time now. There's been, I think, sufficient time for planning to move forward. I have stated, and I'm going to stand by my statement, that I will not approve a budget that has paper transfers in it. So I'd like to see a budgetary number translated for what paper transfers would cost if we just got rid of paper transfers in the system, and I would like to see some planning for that, and if possible, you know, maybe we do all the heavy lifting anyway on the county board, because apparently the administration doesn't want to address tough issues. So let's get going on this one, because I'm not approving this with paper transfers. Now there's on page 251. Paratransit operations. There is preciously little information given to us on what is becoming a major crisis in this community. Now, we've got Mr. Jim Hodson. I appreciate your being here, Mr. Hodson, because I asked the department, family care department about the paratransit issues, and they indicated to me that they weren't familiar with it, and I invited them up to come and listen to this part of the budget. But Ms. Supervisor Schmidt started a little bit. I mean, that estimated trip decrease, 325,000 trips decreased of some of the most vulnerable citizens in this county. And I sure would like to know a lot more about this revenue decrease than you're giving us here. You know, I'm hearing from the organizations that actually care for patients. I have St. Anne's Intergenerational in St. Francis. Supervisor Haas and I have worked on that. This is translating into their budgetary losses, because individuals that used to come to their centers for respite care and others are no longer getting rides. And I keep trying to get to the bottom of the whole spectrum. And I know you don't run family care and all that, but this is a transportation issue. And yet I go to the family care department, and they can't answer the simplest questions on this stuff. Are you at all involved with the logistic here, the issue with regard to using call centers to get cabs out there for individuals who need rides? Your company doesn't address that, correct?
No, we do not, Supervisor. However, being that LogistiCare has now become a part of southeastern Wisconsin, as of September 1st, we're certainly keeping a close eye on that to see if there will be any impact on our operations.
Who is the manager in your company for the paratransit operations?
Our director of paratransit services, her name is Tracy Harrington, S-H-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. And Ms. Harrington, I should mention to you, assumed that position as of October 1st.
Oh, wow. So since October, I'm almost, Mr. Chairman, I'm almost stunned by the issues that are before us with regard to paratransit operations and a new director since October. I don't know how we're going to move forward with this issue. This is... People are dying in the community. People are dying. They're not getting to doctor's appointments. They're not getting to dialysis. We have care providers in the community who have traditionally done the family care, et cetera, who are telling us that they are starting to deficit on their revenue. Now, the governor perhaps does not believe in this program. He created waiting lists in family care. All of this stuff is related. Now, I know we're talking about your budget. This is a major crisis in this community. And we really need your Tracy Harrington to sit down there with Ms. Jim Hodson. And I want a much bigger report. I want this fleshed out on loss of funding, loss of rides, how we're going to address this with regard to making sure that paratransit rides are provided, and I need this fleshed out before we vote on budget. So please, I know that's a big order, but you know, this, in all due respect to the administration, this should have been paid attention to a lot sooner than this. This has been starting to raise its ugly head for about 2 years now, and it's getting to a crisis situation. So I think the board needs to pay much more attention to this than we are. Mr. Grant, you had a $3.5 million surplus in your budget this year, am I correct?
That's correct, Supervisor.
What happened to that surplus? Where is it?
Well, at this point, the surplus is just simply there. We're in the process of updating that report as I speak. But the funds are still there.
Okay. All right. I would like this fleshed out, please, before we have to vote on budget, and I would like the piece on transfers. I think that's everything I wanted to try to cover. I think this is something we really need to start addressing. Unfortunately, budget time is a bad time to be doing all this, but that's what we have. Thank you.
Supervisor Mayo wants back in, then we'll go Supervisor Bowen, Supervisor Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, let's make sure that people understand LogistiCare is not dealing with Milwaukee County. That is something what the state have put together and have filtered off a number of people from paratransit. Let's make sure you understand we are not responsible for what happened to the state and those individuals who are not getting those rides and not getting callbacks and missing appointments and stuff, because that's not Milwaukee County or our paratransit program. So you don't, I understand about the paper transfers, but don't mix the two, because with the supervisor, I mean, everybody have a vote here. I understand it, but please don't mix the two with paratransit, because that is an issue within Milwaukee County, and an issue where I have parents who use, now, unfortunately in Milwaukee County, versus doing Vista Care, because I know a number of people who are not making their appointments, and their loved ones have to take them to the hospital, take them to the doctors, whatever they have to do. The other thing, when you talked about the shields, we are always trying to put shields on the bus, but we have a number of issues when those shields came up. Mr. Chairman, do have the union sign off on all the shields now that we're going to put on these buses? Because there's been a very fantastic thing with the union and the management at the time, and I would like to know, have they signed off on all these new shields that are going on?
Mr. Grant, do you have an answer for that?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, as a part of a pilot program and attempting to identify an appropriate shield that would be acceptable on the buses, we did form a committee that was comprised of both management staff as well as union representatives. It's my understanding that the committee has made a determination that the shield that is currently specified as part of the RFP that's out on the street today is an acceptable shield.
So the short answer is yes.
Correct,
short
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Grant, I would like you to have that shield, and I'll make a demo to my agenda so that shield will be coming in front of our committee so everyone will see that shield, because I want to make sure that we are on the same page, because that's been a very strong issue about this. Second of all, we are working with Mr. Graham to look at other things today so supervisors can make sure that we can have day passes and stuff. But also I would like to make sure that when we talk about safety and it's talking about perception, that we do the right thing. The reason why we started back in 2009, and then Rock and Hut came in late 2009-2010, when the Sheriff's Department had the sole authority over our buses, the response time was not right there, and sometimes the city of Milwaukee took over. And when this county board decided that we will have a security to take place, and we was not happy with WAC and HUD at the present moment, and they started beefing up their time. We looked at the sheriff to say, can we go back and give back to the sheriff's department? But he could only give us between 6 and 8 deputies, and we have many lane miles and transfers, and that's why we stayed with WAC and HUD. When you look at $500,000 additional, I'm looking at to protect our clients and also our drivers. Because if we can make sure that we have people on those buses at the time when students get out, high traffic, and when there's different events, just have somebody to deter that and perception that we have security, we will make sure that the people think that they are safe. If people feel that they're not safe, they will not ride our transit system. And that's the reason why I hope that you will look at that $500,000 and keep that in safety. Keep the safety issue in front of you. Shields, if we can find some money and to put it on the buses, and everybody's agreeable, because now when you start putting shields on and they say, we really didn't like these shields, that's the reason I want to make sure that we have that issue, I mean, in front of our committee, because that was a big issue before. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions. Before G4S was contracted, was there a target enforcement unit with Sheriff's Department for our buses?
I'll try to address that, Mr. Chairman. I would have to say at the same time that G4S was providing security for security services for us, at that time we were also working in collaboration with the Sheriff's Office, and the Sheriff made a determination to dedicate a transfer enforcement unit to the transit system. So they were actually working side by side with one another at one point.
How about before G4S was contracted and before we privatized security?
prior to privatizing security, I'm not certain if the if that TEU or Transport Enforcement Union was in place.
Okay, and would you see it as a viable option to invest that $500,000 that would probably double their security size to probably create that target enforcement unit with our Sheriff's Department?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, certainly anything that we can do to enhance security for the bus transit system, you know, I would be in favor of. I do not know and cannot speak to what that $500,000 translates to from a standpoint of what that means from the Sheriff's Office.
And among the incidents that happened on the bus, are majority of those incidents where law enforcement is called?
That would be incorrect. In fact, the vast majority of incidents are on buses are either behavioral or inappropriate behavior and do not necessitate requests for law enforcement intervention.
Okay. And to continue down the road of paratransit and ridership, there are revenue benefits increasing ridership, correct?
Well, with respect to paratransit, certainly, our goal is to provide a meaningful and productive service for those individuals in the community that are eligible for paratransit services. So if that ridership should increase, it should be beneficial to the community.
And then also fixed route services, that they're with ridership increasing, we benefit revenue as well, correct?
Correct.
Was there any initiatives or efforts to increase ridership in this budget or are going on currently?
I'm having difficulty hearing your questions. I don't know if the mic's not working or get into it. Sure. You know.
Just not that close, I'm sorry. I was asking what efforts currently in this budget are being proposed to increase ridership.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, this particular budget does not have a specific program aimed at increasing ridership, either on the fixed route services or the paratransit services. The budget is designed to maintain the existing services and hopefully the level of ridership that we currently have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get information because I think it's important, especially moving towards 2014 when we will run the risk of losing out on the number of funds that our buses are really in competition with people's decision to drive their own cars, and we need to do everything that we can to try to increase ridership for the sustainability of our own system. Thanks.
Ms. Torres, did you want to add something?
Thank you, Chairman, Supervisors. There was a proposed packet from the Sheriff's Department for transit security that I believe was before Transportation Public Works. No, okay, maybe I'm incorrect, sorry.
How recent was that?
I'm getting a nod that it was not. It may have been just in his proposed budget. So the committee may look at the sheriff's proposed budget for a package that was not included in our budget. It was totaled about $5.5 million. Josh Fudge is here and can address any specifics that you would like to know about what that would buy in deputy sheriff hours. And second, on paratransit, I'll pass it off to family care because they're obviously a little bit more versed in how paratransit works for their clients. But while the estimated trips decreased for Milwaukee County paratransit, that doesn't reflect an overall community decrease. We are heavily subsidizing paratransit at Milwaukee County through tax levy. So by increasing the per fare rate on our end, it's providing other providers the accountability to step up and provide fares not on tax levy dollars. So, again, family care can probably give you further details on how those other providers in the community are stepping up and providing more rides. So there's a logistic care issue, there's a transit issue, and then there's a independent provider pool that are out there that all intermingle in paratransit. We're very cognizant of how this is in the community and obviously would not do anything to jeopardize Milwaukee County either managed care organization patients or BHD Health and Human Services patients that need to get to needed appointments and stay on top of that very adequately. Thank you.
I guess I would ask if anybody has any questions of Mr. Fudge regarding the Sheriff's $5.5 million plan for security, they could ask him on their own time since it wasn't included in the county executive's budget, and I think its fate would be uncertain before the board at best, so we don't need to spend time dealing with that here, but he has information if somebody wants to find that out. Supervisor Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of course, we're going to enjoy a pleasant year of a relatively stable operation at MCCS, given that the CMAQ money is still in place. I'm curious, you know, while we're enjoying this year of tranquility, there's going to be this giant cliff looming again, for the same time, looming on the horizon. I'm curious, what steps are being taken to find another grant? Are there more federal grants that are being pursued by either MCCS, NCDOT, by the executive branch? And how are these being explored?
Mr. Grant?
Supervisor, as Mr. Buzalaki mentioned earlier, you know, one of the things that we will be paying close attention to is the fact that the Transportation Policy Commission is expected to come out with a report in December of this year. We will be paying close attention to that report and what it recommends to the state legislature going forward, particularly as it relates to funding for transit. Certainly one of the things we'll look at going into the new year is any grant opportunities to reapply for congestion mitigation and air quality funding, which is referred to as CMAQ, to continue to express bus routes in 2014. You know, it's too early to know whether or not that funding will be available or when it will be available, but we'll certainly be keeping our eye on that as well.
And is there anything on the table now that you can that's being worked on to get more funds?
No.
Also, I would ask if we could have a report on the impact of the elimination of transfers on revenues, given the current fare structure.
You did ask
for
that.
You did? Okay. Well, thank you for your previous wisdom, Supervisor Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Anything further, Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor House, could you quick repeat the? I think I had a similar question. I want to make sure that I'm not asking in triplicate for what you just asked for.
Yes, I had asked if we could have a report on the impacts of the elimination of transfers, paper transfers, given the current fare structure. Supervisor Dursick said, I asked for that too. And I said, thank you very much.
That's budgetary impact you're asking?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, one of my follow-up questions is if Mr. Grant has any information as to what percentage of the incidences as far as security or safety issues on the buses involve bus transfers?
I think that's a good question, Supervisor. I've taken a very close look at that myself. I've looked at the last 8 months for the year just recently. That's through the period ending August 31st of 2012. I think there's an incorrect perception that paper transfers are a cause of either the majority or all problems that are occurring on our buses, and I would disagree with that. And although that perception is being put out there and perhaps even shared with some of you, I don't see the facts that back that up. The facts that I have and the data that I review tell me that 95% fare-related incidents that occur on our buses have absolutely nothing to do with a paper transfer. We are seeing more problems with objects being thrown at drivers or drivers being spat on by individuals, which we categorize as an assault on the driver. That's where our problems are occurring, as the data tells us, and that is why we certainly support the board's decision to move forward with equipping the buses or outfitting the buses with protective shields.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grant did answer what percentage, 95% of fare-related incidences have nothing to do with transfers, but that doesn't answer the question of what percentage of incidences as a whole are transfer-related. Are we to deduce that it's 5%, or is, because you said fare-related in the beginning, so I don't know if that's drilling down to a smaller percentage than what I'm asking for.
I would agree with your analogy, Supervisor. That's a broader question, and let me get back to the committee on that.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm curious if there's been any study done on how eliminating the paper transfers before the new fare boxes are installed will impact customers, particularly the most vulnerable.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Supervisor?
Yes, I can, Mr. Grant. I'm very much in favor of getting rid of paper transfers. However, the transition is something that I'm concerned about, because my perception is that getting the new fare boxes is going to take a long time, whether justified or not. It's a long process, and that the call to abolish paper transfers is immediate, which for the most part I support that call. My concern is if there's been any type of study, research, questions, whatnot, done to look at how eliminating paper transfers before the new fare boxes are ready, so for example getting a day pass or something like that in the interim, how would that affect the most vulnerable, our customers as a whole, including and especially the most vulnerable?
Well, in terms of vulnerable customers, I'm interpreting that to read customers that use cash fare or use tickets most frequently, whom would be our low-income riders, seniors, as well as children. Am I following your question correctly, Supervisor?
Somewhat. My concern is that we may charge forward with changes or implementing structure to the fares, and that the proper questions that are the most important of how will this affect the customers may not be being asked. So I guess my question is somebody asking the questions? Are the questions being answered? If they are, do we have answers to those questions? And if not, why not? To expand just the idea of, if we're looking at doing this type of a transition, because we have competing ideas and parameters as to how long it'll take to get fare boxes, along with the concept that we want to get rid of these paper transfers ASAP, are we going to be creating more problems for ourselves and more dissatisfaction and more possibly security issues or financial issues in the community without asking these questions? So if your answer is yes, we've polled the public, or we've asked the questions, or we've done a study, then yes would be the answer to that. But I'm just curious how much foresight has gone into looking at this transition.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, certainly we have, transit management has certainly taken a very careful look at this. We presented a report to the Transportation and Public Works Committee at its last cycle on this very subject, and try to echo our concern that, for example, simply eliminating the paper transfer by itself, which was one alternative that we looked at, would certainly have an adverse impact on those riders who either today pay cash fare or purchase tickets as their fare form, which is about 40% of our customers. In that case, those individuals who currently pay a fare of $2.25, that's cash fare to board a bus, without the paper transfer, their fare to reach the same destination would rise to $4.50. That's one of the concerns that we laid out in our report as to how this would have an impact on our customers, your constituents. As I mentioned earlier, we certainly have gone back to the drawing board, as has been requested by Supervisor Mayo, to see if we can come up with a least onerous alternative, which we're working on as we speak, and I hope to have that information available this week.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. just
for scheduling, so we know, and I got you, Supervisor Mayo, if you have something to add. Supervisor Alexander had sent an email to the co-chairs asking that we potentially break for the flash mob that will be upset at the courthouse at noon. I had anticipated at about 11 o'clock we'd be done. This has lingered a little longer than I expected. We have the medical examiner. I'd like to just do the medical examiner and finish it when we're done. If someone wants to leave to go watch the flash mob, we aren't taking any votes. You won't be missing anything, but I don't anticipate breaking and coming back from the medical examiner at this point. Also, for scheduling purposes, I hope everybody knows the time change for tomorrow. We're at 10 o'clock. And 10, my original one's at 10, but 10:30. So, and we will not be meeting Thursday or Friday. We're keeping Wednesday open, depending on how far we get tomorrow. Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to also ask Mr. Grant, when he bring in the information about the shields, that he also bring in the report about all the incidents and what percentage dealing with fares and all everything else. Just break it down, if you can, break it down to actually what incidents you call for, why Wackenhagen's call, why police is call, and just break it down in percentage-wise so we can have all this stuff up front. Because I think, as Supervisor Alexander made that comment, I think we need to make sure that everyone understands what's going on our transit system, so the public will not think that they are getting attacked, and we definitely want to make sure our drivers are safe. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Hoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that we've had a lot of discussion about costs of doing things, and one thing I'd like to see in this report requested by Supervisor Jurczyk, Supervisor, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to see as part of that report an estimate on the implementation of a day pass. We saw some curious numbers at the last Transit Committee meeting, and I'd like to see this included, more real numbers included with the reports that you'll be giving to us later. Also, I noticed that your financial director is sitting there at the table, and we have not heard from you very much today, sir. Could you expound on what we've been bantering about? With regards, we're talking about the costs to the most vulnerable, which is a huge consideration. We've been talking about possible day passage and eliminating the transfers here. Can you share some perspective, sir?
Mr. Chair, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I think Supervisor Alexander had a good topic of how it affects the customer. And if we were to eliminate transfers, even with issuing a day pass, there's still going to be some level of inconvenience for those customers to buy that day pass. And it's certainly a lot different than today, where as they board the bus, they pay their fare, they get their transfer, and they move on. So I think, in my mind, that's one of the bigger considerations that has to be recognized. The other thing, we've worked out a couple different models. If we were to eliminate the transfer, to keep the fares as they are, so we'll have numbers on that, and then also to adjust the adult fare in anticipation of reducing or eliminating the transfer and also introducing a day pass. So as Mr. Grant alluded, someone that might have to pay $4.50 to make a connecting trip or pay for two trips, it might be something less than that. But in my estimation, it's again, the convenience or the impact on the customer.
And that would also then have an impact on the paratransit rate, correct?
That is correct. If we were to reduce the adult cash fare, that would also reduce the paratransit fare.
Okay. Well, we look forward to that report, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything further? Supervisor Jersey.
Well, just so we flesh out what we're requesting, and I thought it was clear, well, it requests a report on transfers, but apparently the rest of the committee didn't think so. So on the paratransit, I would like the report to flesh out the operating expenses decrease of about $7.5 million. Address that more specifically, please. And the decrease in expenditure and revenues, which resulted in the fewer estimated trips, with an estimated trip decrease of 325,385. I want you to flesh that out for us, the impacts on the populations that took those trips and what the planning was. Now, if it's the state program, and I understand Supervisor Mail's point, and I was actually familiar with that, but there is a real cost that's being realized, and it may be that the state trips aren't...
I think you're starting to wander. If you want to get to request,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm going.
No, I know you're doing fine, but then you sort of got off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep it, but we need that a lot more fleshed out than this little blurb in the budget that we currently have. And if you do have some solutions to the issue, or if there are some groups that are trying to address this, please include that. So we can get more information on that. Thank you.
Mr. Campbell wants to respond. And Mr. Grant, are you clear on what Supervisor Drizek is asking for?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've been taking notes, and we'll follow up with
it. Okay. Thank you.
Chairman, Supervisors, just to follow up on that one request and to provide some clarity today so we're not leaving the room concerned about the impact on the budget. If you look at the budget on the expenditure side, there was a charge reduction of about $6.9 million on the expenditure side and a revenue reduction of about $4.9 million. That's on page 252, the fourth page of this budget narrative. If you flip back to page 251 and go to the paragraph titled Revenue and Expenditure Overview, it says operating expenses decreased by 7.567 relative to paratransit, as well as the 4966. So that provides the explanation about where the revenues are expenditures are declining, and you'll have a requisite drop off in revenues. Jim Hodson is here today to kind of explain what he is seeing from the family care side, and I'd like to kind of turn it over to him right now to kind of provide a brief explanation as to what the
I'd be happy with the report. You don't have to take committee time right now to do it.
Okay, you can read. Can you get something to Supervisor Drizek and then share with the rest of the committee?
But it's not like a service level impact. Other providers are stepping in. That's the short answer to your concern.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like people aren't getting served.
And I'd like it fleshed out. Whether that's true or not, I'd like it fleshed out.
And we'll certainly have that provided.
Thank you.
Supervisor Romolet?
Very quickly, not to belabor the point, but there also was an extensive audit of the paratransit system that was done, and so perhaps we could get copies of that audit made available to the members of this committee that are not on the Transportation Committee. That audit was heard before the Transportation Committee. Thank you.
That's a good suggestion. Okay. Anything further? If not, thank you for your time. We'll move to our final org unit.
The last department is 4900, the medical examiner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, we don't have a lot of changes this year, as you know.
Just identify yourself for the...
I'm sorry, Dr. Brian Peterson, I'm a medical examiner, and Karen Domagoski, my operations manager. Essentially, what you'll see going forward to 2013 is we're projecting a little bit less revenue. In brief, there's some revenue that we have control over, some that we don't. The revenue that's decreased, and they're trying to show more realistically, is the portion that we don't. That would be fees for things like death certificates and so forth. The revenue that we do have some control over has increased. That would be the referral cases from outside counties. aside from that, we really don't have a lot of change to talk about, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any question for Dr. Peterson? Supervisor Drzik?
You do flesh out on page 224 that part of your program description is detecting tuberculosis, hepatitis, meningitis, and other infectious diseases, and taking precautions against the spread of disease. I wasn't familiar that your office did those things. Is this a new initiative? Have you always done that? Is this strictly information that you find through doing autopsies?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, yes. Part of any autopsy is looking for evidence of infection. And lately, the infectious disease that probably has taken more headline space than any other is flu, various kinds of flu. And we survey for that during flu season. We send specimens to the City Health Department and so forth. But not infrequently we're asked about issues such as meningitis and tuberculosis. Again, that's part of our investigation process. And any autopsy where it's a concern, we take cultures and so forth. So that's not a change.
And then with regard to autopsies that you do for other counties, do the surrounding communities, in any of the surrounding communities outside Milwaukee County, have your own medical examiner?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, right around us, the only county that does is Waukesha County. They have their own medical examiner shop. But the other contiguous counties, Kenosha, Racine, Ozaukee, and then skip one over Jefferson, do not have their own in terms of performing autopsies. They have their own people to do the investigations. So in those cases, they'll be assigning their own manner of death, but we do the autopsies for them at a fee to produce the cause of death.
And how do you arrive at that fee?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, in a way it depends on which county it is. Now, there's some of this history that was there before I got into the position. So, for example, we've been doing Ozaukee County's autopsies all along, and that fee's been there. Jefferson County, they're the farthest out. We charge them the least because they have to transport the bodies farther. And for Kenosha and Racine, we kind of split the difference between the two. My thinking is that as we aggregate counties around us and actually provide more service, then we'll have more control over the fee that we charge, with, of course, an eye towards increasing that.
I mean, Jefferson County could certainly choose to have a medical examiner on staff, so the fact that we are accommodating their distance is, it's interesting. I guess I would think that perhaps we need to look at this fee for service. I mean, if we're becoming a regional provider, we should make sure that the region shares in the costs, make sure that benefits, for example, benefits for your employees are included in these fees. I certainly don't object to having regional services provided by Milwaukee County. But what I do object to is when we don't get properly compensated, because these counties are often wealthier than we are. And if property taxpayers in Milwaukee County are subsidizing services for wealthier communities, that concerns me. So I would like to have you look more carefully at how you do fee for services and so on. And of course, a recent case kind of highlighted something in the Wisconsin statutes that I wasn't previously familiar with, and that is there are two places you can actually request an inquest. You can request the district attorney to do an inquest, or you can request the medical examiner to do an inquest. And my question goes to the question, my thought goes to the question of how frequently is your office requested by community individuals and or their attorneys, more likely, to conduct an inquest based on a death that the medical examiner has been involved with?
Two different questions there, if I could address them in chronological order. We have to be careful about the term medical examiner. Other counties can have a medical examiner. In Wisconsin, all that means is somebody appointed by the county executive to investigate death. It doesn't mean a forensic pathologist that can do autopsies unless the population is over 500,000. So that would be currently who has that, Fond du Lac, Waukesha, Dane, and Milwaukee. Other counties have medical examiners, but they're lay people that simply are investigating death, but they can't do the autopsies. So, in a sense, every referral case that we do, every outside county autopsy that we do, represents revenue, because really our personnel costs are fixed. So I like outside cases. They're bringing revenue into the county that we wouldn't have otherwise. So that's part A. Part B is that as far as the inquest process goes, that's really a district attorney issue. They're the ones that can hold inquests and call for them. We respond. So we provide information. We'll testify. I will testify at an inquest, for example, but I can't call one myself. The call has been essentially zero since I've returned to Wisconsin from California. In California, lots of inquests. That was their process there. But here in Wisconsin, not so much. We have meetings all the time. So I will typically attend meetings with the district attorney, with law enforcement, with investigators, with the family, and with members of my staff to answer questions. But it's not a legal process. It's not a confrontational process. It's more of a conference around a table. So since I've been here, there has not been a request from either this county or any other of the counties that we serve for an inquest.
So and perhaps we're going to have discussion outside this committee, because it was my understanding from reviewing the recent statutes is that medical examiners can be requested for an inquest. And I understand your response that medical examiners don't have to be coroners. If I use the word coroner, does that get to you? Or not? Why don't you tell us who you are in terms of your official description?
The breakdown is a coroner is elected, and I'm not elected. So most of the counties in Wisconsin have an elected coroner. That's typically a layperson. They run death investigation. I'm a medical examiner, but I'm also a forensic pathologist medical examiner. We have very few of those in Wisconsin. Most places in the country don't have those either. But that means somebody who's been trained in forensic pathology also runs the system. And again, with respect to that statute, I know what you're saying. We certainly respond, and I'll attend any hearing I'm asked to attend or subpoenaed to. But I can't call an inquest. That statute says the district attorney can do that, and pretty much Mr. Chisholm's choice has been not to call for them.
As a forensic pathologist, are you also a medical examiner?
Well, the confusing thing is anywhere in the country, except for Wisconsin, medical examiner means forensic pathologist. Dr. G, medical examiner. All right, she's a forensic pathologist. In Wisconsin, all that medical examiner means specifically is you've been appointed by the county executive and confirmed by the board. It just so happens, because Milwaukee County has a large enough population, the medical examiner from Milwaukee County also has to be a forensic pathologist. But there are places like Washington County, for example, where the person that runs that office is called a medical examiner, but he's not a forensic pathologist. In fact, he's a former coroner.
I understand that. As a forensic pathologist, you're also a medical examiner. True?
In my current position, yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay. And it's my understanding in Wisconsin statutes, an inquest can be requested of a medical examiner. And I'll be specific. There was an attorney in a recent incident that indicated in the news media that she had requested a inquest through the medical examiner. And maybe that information is wrong, and if so, your answer would be, I was never requested to do such a inquest.
Yeah, I was not. No, ma'am. And I would say maybe a better word would be convene. An inquest is convened by the district attorney, not by the medical examiner.
Again, I believe the statutes indicate the medical examiner is another individual besides the DA that can convene, I'll use your word, an inquest. But you haven't been requested to do that.
No, I have not.
All right. And, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying about you receive fees from outside counties, mm-hmm. but you also probably have a larger staff because of autopsies you perform. So Milwaukee County has a larger staff than we might need if we kept your services strictly in county. And I would like to make sure that mm-hmm. the fees you collect are sufficient to pay for the additional staff that Milwaukee County has hired. So I'd like more information on that fee structure, if you could please. You don't have to give it to me today, mm-hmm. but if I could have the information on how you arrive at those fee structures. Thank you.
Any further questions? Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your medical assistant, Dr. Poulos, is he still on staff?
Yes, sir, he is.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions of Dr. Peterson. So with that, we're through. The committee will reconvene tomorrow at 10:30. Thank you.
Thank you.